There's this little bit of a fallacy out there right now that people think that dogs are just going to automatically want to do what we want them to do. I think there's a little bit of a disconnect with the animal world in a lot of cases. So I just want to bring that back together today, and I want to talk about why it's not reasonable to expect your dog to make good choices. Dogs make the choices that best suit them.
Yeah.
And often that choice doesn't best suit us.
Yeah.
Well, even people don't make good choices at times. So
exactly.
how can we expect an animal to make good choices?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So we've got temptation on one hand, and then we've got the choice on the other hand. And at some point, we do want to be able to say to the dog, okay, you make a choice, and they make the choice that we want.
Right.
But that's not going to happen naturally. And I think that that's what a lot of people are expecting at this point. We'll see a lot of people come into classes and say, well, you know, I go out there in the real world and he's got a mind of his own. Mm-hmm. And that statement always makes me giggle a little bit because I think, what other option would there be?
Right. Yes, yes.
To put it bluntly.
Right.
I wasn't sure I was going to word that there, obviously.
Right.
So
we
I
need
stammered
to do
a bit.
Is it the Vulcan mind meld from Star Trek?
Ooh.
Yeah, I can't remember how he does it. If he stares or does he touch your side?
Yeah.
Oh, no, I think he takes your head.
Oh. So, have you done your Vulcan
mind
before
melt.
You head out there in the real world with your dog? Have you done your Vulcan mind melt?
I need to do that with children, too. That would help a lot with children's choices, yes.
What I really want to accomplish today is letting people know that if that's the position you're in right now where you say, you know what, I keep hearing that I should let my dog make a choice, but my dog never makes the choice that involves me. That's not your fault.
No.
It's not something you're doing wrong. It's not something that is lacking in your relationship. It's the nature of the dog.
They're self-serving.
Absolutely.
Yes.
And that's the part that I think gets forgotten. We love our dogs so incredibly. And I mean, understandably so, right? They're amazing creatures. Who wouldn't fall madly in love with them instantly?
Mm.
You know, everybody who's brought home a dog or a puppy knows that even when they're naughty, you're instantly madly in love with
them. Exactly, yes.
In the overwhelming majority of cases, right? It doesn't matter how many puppies were in the litter. You're always going to be convinced that you got the steal. You got the best
one.
How
yes.
did they end up missing out on how great this puppy was that came home to live with
definitely
me?
Unconditional love.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But I don't want people to think that they're somehow lacking or that they don't know how to bond with their dog because their dogs are making choices that a dog would make.
Right.
So I want to talk about that today. And how do we get to the point where we can ask our dogs to make a choice and expect that they're going to make a good choice that we like?
Right.
So first off, I want to say that good choices, like the dog doesn't have this moral compass, right?
No. If you're on a desert island with your dog, and there's only one sandwich left, you would share that with your dog.
You would?
You would. I would take a bite, you know, and maybe I'd eat all the good stuff and give my dogs the crust. But at least we shared our sandwich.
Yes.
But you know what? Your dog will not share the sandwich with you. If that sandwich is on the ground and it's your only food for 2 weeks, your dog will eat it without even thinking of you.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's the difference. They don't think like we do.
Exactly. And I think that on some level, that's part of what I love about dogs so much. Because I never have to question why my dog is making that choice. I never have to think, you know what? Is my dog just trying to make me feel better today because I'm not feeling, you know, particularly happy for whatever reason? Or is my dog lying to me because they don't want to have a tough conversation with me about something? Like, I never have to think those things about the dog, which, I mean, the way I put that was ridiculous. But
no,
I never have to question
sense.
My dog's loyalty or disloyalty. You know, if my dog is doing something that I think, aw, they really want to engage with me, that's genuine. Mm-hmm. And if my dog is doing something that I think, oh, you know what? I don't want them doing that. They shouldn't be doing that. Mm-hmm. But it's a genuine reaction on their part.
Right.
So I need to change something that I'm doing to help my dog understand that they'd be better off to make the choice that aligns with what I like.
Right. Yes.
And that can be a tricky thing to navigate. Mm-hmm. So first thing I want to talk about is some of our first steps in choice work. What are some of the first things that you do in terms of like rule outs and those types of activities with your dogs?
Well, I want my dog to know that doing things for me is valuable,
mm-hmm.
and
just interacting with people brings good things.
Right.
So it's valuable to interact with me. It's not as valuable to go and interact with the vacuum. The vacuum doesn't give you much back, but I give you a lot back. I use rewards. I use funds. I like my vacuum too. But I want the puppy to know that it's the humans that are giving you the good things. Humans control the fun. They control the good things. Other things, you know, aren't going to give you back what I'm giving you back.
Yeah, exactly. And that can be a really hard lesson to teach a dog because they do have a mind of their own.
Right.
I would expect nothing less. You know, my dog, my new puppy comes home and I want to get inside that mind. I want to see what makes that mind tick so that I can plan my best tactics for making sure that that puppy thinks, oh, the sun rises and sets out of your ears, right, as Gail McKinnon likes to say. Right? I was expecting a different ending.
I know,
that's
what I was waiting for, a different ending there.
Right. Yes. That's the, what's the PG version?
Yes, yes, yes.
So I want to know what that dog loves, what that puppy really gets turned on by innately, so that I can use those things to make myself more valuable.
Right.
But I can't just expect that for some arbitrary reason that my puppy is going to automatically see me as valuable. They're probably not.
No, they're not. They're not. Yeah. They're not.
There are some dogs that will come home and, you know, they love you from day one and they follow you around and life is wonderful, but that is the rarity. Right. I've had one of those dogs in my life. That was my Tyler.
Right.
And from 4 weeks of age, I would go and visit the litter every week and good friends with the breeder, you know, still good friends with the breeder. And he's been gone since 2015. He was born in what? 2004. So, I mean, we've got a long relationship, her and I. And I used to go and spend time with them every week. And from 4 weeks on, that dog loved me. And I think I've talked about Tyler on the podcast before, and that I actually was at a point where I thought, if it's not this puppy, if it's not Sully, shout out to Ash, who's got a baby Sully too.
Oh, yes.
If it's not Sully that's coming home with me, I don't think I can take a puppy from this litter, because I was so in love with that puppy right from there. And he came home and his whole life, he was mine. He loved me to pieces. I don't know why that happened. Mm-hmm. It happened naturally from that, you know, four weeks on. Mm-hmm. I do know why that it continued to happen once he came home, because he was a very driven working dog. He loved the work. He loved to work. And I was his outlet for work. So that innately made me valuable. But he was the rarity.
Right.
Because most dogs, they're not looking to humans to engage in that work. They're looking to other dogs. They're looking to the environment. They're looking to, like, that's where they're getting all their satisfaction.
Right, yes. And you figure for the first 8 weeks of life, you know, unless they've had an exceptional breeder, most puppies are looking towards their litter mates for fun. They're looking to, you know, for self-serving things. It's like, oh, look, I found this toy over here. I'll lay and play with it. So they haven't maybe had a lot of strong guidance from humans.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that a lot of the times we sort of play into making things worse for ourselves as the society that we are. Excuse me. Where we expect that the puppy now needs to play ad nauseum and visit ad nauseum with every single person and every single puppy out there in the name of socialization.
Right. And people say, yeah, like, oh, let them do this. Let them do that. And then
Go ahead.
The puppy then believes that, well, I'm in charge of these people. These people will let me do whatever I want. And now the people are losing their value to the puppy.
Yeah, absolutely. And we often have students who come in saying, like, you know, what do you say to the people who start to give you grief about what you're doing with your dog? You know, I get so many people just saying to me, let them be a dog. And honestly, at this point in my life, I just laugh about it and move on. If I feel like the person genuinely wants to understand what I'm doing, I feel like they would word it a little bit differently. And I would be more than happy to explain, you know, that at this point, I want to control lots of things because I don't want to end up with problems that I could have prevented with the control and have much more work to do down the road. I'm setting up for future competition. I'm setting up to have a dog that will work well in a very busy dog environment and not, you know, not be sucked into those distractions, et cetera, et cetera. There's always method to our madness. And I think it's hard for, I mean, in my early days, it was hard for me to articulate that. It was hard for me to risk feeling like I was sounding rude to somebody who was, like, essentially being rude to me by saying things like, oh, just let him be a dog. You know what? That's judgy. You don't get to judge what I'm doing with my own dog. Yes. It has no bearing on your life, especially when it's a stranger, right? So at this point in my life, I just kind of go, eh, you know what?
Right.
You can either be part of it or you cannot. But right. if you're just going to make snide comments, then you're not going to be part of it.
Right,
and
exactly.
I'm going to move on with my life. And that's okay. Mm. I'm okay with that. Right. I don't need to have you interacting with my dog. But if you genuinely want to know why I'm doing what I'm doing, then sure, let's chat about it. I'm more than happy to explain what right. I'm doing. I yes. don't need to justify it, but I'm and happy to talk about it.
The proof is always in the pudding too, because yeah. sometimes you'll see those people's dogs and you go, yeah. your method's not really working for you, isn't
yeah.
it? Yes, because you can absolutely. See their dog doesn't have much value for them. The dog yeah. doesn't really know they exist.
Yeah, exactly. And a lot of the times that is by allowing the dog to make choices before they're ready
right.
to make
yes.
choices.
Yes, indulging your puppy.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. Dogs really like black and white concrete information, and especially when they're in that period of time before they reach adulthood, mm-hmm. right? We don't want to give our puppies this opportunity to make choices that are going to be self-serving for them, because that is going to stick. It's going to become ingrained. Mm-hmm. And it's also like, that's the time when I want to be spending my time really training, really bonding, like really setting up this awesome relationship right. with my dog. So I'm directing their behavior as much as possible, because the last thing I want to do is be saying no, 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 no.
Right. Yes.
To the choices that mm-hmm. my dog's making naturally, mm-hmm. because that's going to be demotivating for both of us.
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. If my dog decides that they'd rather sniff the ground than be engaged with me, that's going to be rewarding for the puppy. So right. me allowing that choice and basically standing and waiting for him to go, okay, I'm bored with this sniff. What's my mom doing back there?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Probably not really.
But even I just had a question on our online program this morning, and it's a young puppy, and the puppy's decided it doesn't want to work for its kibble. So we encourage young puppies that you take one of their kibble meals, and that's what you do your training with throughout the day. And this puppy has decided, no, I don't want the kibble. And, I recommended, I said, well, we're definitely not going to, grab something different. Cause then the puppy says, oh, if I just hold out, I can control these people. Exactly. They'll bring me something different. I'm going to offer the, offer the kibble. You don't want it? Oh, well, I guess you can go sit in your crate now. So instead of letting the puppy go, I didn't take the kibble, but now I get to wander off and chew on my toy and sniff under the bed and, grab a Kleenex. Now the puppy's in its crate. So I'm controlling, saying, do things for me and I'll do things for you.
Exactly. Exactly. And you start to shift where the dog innately sees value in their life, because they are a dog. They're going to rely on their instincts. But when you do what you were just describing, you start to shift where that value actually is. Mm-hmm. So now, instead of the dog thinking about, let's sniff the floor and let's explore the corner and all the things that might be exciting in this space, and ignoring the human entirely because mm-hmm. this is more novel and exciting.
Right.
Now I have an opportunity for my dog to have learned that I'm valuable. So now is the time where I might be in a position to say, okay, now we're gonna start the choice work, because I'm pretty sure that my dog's gonna make the choice I want, and then I'll be able to reinforce that.
Right.
So let's back up just a little bit, because I want to explain a little bit more what we mean when we talk about choices specifically. So rule out behavior. We can do rule outs with just about anything. It's traditionally done with food, but it can be done with food in hand, food on the ground. It can be done with a toy in hand. There's all sorts of ways of saying, I want you to come to this decision on your own. And when you do, I'm going to reward you for that, which is basically what the rule out is.
Right.
So the rudimentary rule out is having a little bit of food in your hand and just showing it to the puppy. So with an open palm, you would just show it to the puppy or the dog. And if they move forward to take it, which is a natural inclination,
right.
it's what they're going to do.
Right. All you if
do
someone is, offered me a jujube, I would move forward to take it.
Oh yeah, me too. You'd have to beat me to it. But basically what I'm doing is I'm saying those natural inclinations are not going to be rewarded. And I'm simply making the food disappear.
Right.
So I'm not trying to push the puppy away from the food. I'm not trying to physically stop him from getting the food. Mm-hmm. All I'm going to do is make the food go away. So it's no longer an option for the puppy. Mm-hmm. And then when he says, it's gone, and he sort of backs off
right.
from that food, I'm going to open my hand again. Mm-hmm. And of course, he's going to go, ooh, a piece of candy.
Right, yeah.
That's Family Guy? That Ooh, a piece of candy.
Ooh, a piece of candy. I think, yeah.
They're trying to catch James Woods, I think.
Right, yes, in a box, yes. That, yeah.
Anyways, okay, so I've got the food in my hand, I open my hand again, and the puppy sees it, and of course he's going to go for it, because again, ooh, a piece of candy. Mm-hmm. He goes for it, it goes away again. It no longer is an option if you're impulsive about it.
Right.
And I'm going to keep doing that until the puppy goes, okay, that's not working. And this is the brilliant thing with dogs. They're very tactical, mm-hmm. right? If they recognize that one tactic's not working for them, they're going to try another tactic, right. right? They don't get stuck up on their egos like we do as humans. You know what? This must work. This should work.
Right.
I'm going to keep doing and doing and doing and doing because this end result is different than what I expected. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they're not like that. They will go, okay, well, that's a waste of energy, basically. That's not doing me any good. So I'm going to try something else. So the moment my dog doesn't go for the food, when I make it reappear again, at that point, I'm going to say yes. And I'm going to give him that cookie. So I'm going to reach in, take the cookie out of my hand, deliver it to the dog to let him know that was the choice. That right there. So that's choice work, right? But I have controlled the thing in my hand so that he can't make the wrong choice right. and get rewarded for it. Mm-hmm. I mean, he can make the wrong choice, but he can't get rewarded for it. Right? So if he goes for the food in my hand and I close my hand, it goes away. That choice didn't work. Mm-hmm. So now I'm narrowing it down, which is what the rule out basically is. I could do the same thing with a toy, right? Mm-hmm. We do this a lot to create toy manners. Mm-hmm. It's one of the early things that I do with my puppies, right? I'm sure you do it too,
yes.
right?
Yes.
Okay, talk about that for a bit. How would that look if you were doing it with a toy and creating manners and looking for the better choice?
Well, I never want my dog to jump up and grab and snatch a toy. That's dangerous too. If my young child is carrying one of their toys and the puppy perceives it as one of their toys, they could jump up and grab. I remember one time when I was little, one of our dogs jumped up at my grandmother as she was taking off her scarf to grab the scarf.
Ooh.
And my grandmother got pushed back up against the wall. And this was when I was a little girl. It was one of my parents' boxers. And right then and there, it's like we realized that that dog needs some impulse control.
Yes.
So we want to do that as a safety thing.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
We do it in class all the time. We, have the dog sit. They have to wait till we offer the toy before we're going to let them take that toy.
Yeah.
So snatching is not allowed.
No, and here's the thing. A lot of the times what people think that means is keep the toy away from the
dog. Oh, yeah, and they hold it in the air, and that makes the dog snatch even more. Yes.
So here's the thing. You need to set yourself up so that you're in a position to be calm and cool and collected and simply remove that option when they make the wrong choice.
Mm-hmm.
So in the scenario with toys, what would that look like? What's something that you might do to make sure that your dog can't jump up and snatch that toy?
Well, what I'll do is I'll work beside a table and I'll move the toy to the table. So I have the toy in my hand. The dog is, I'll be stepping on the dog's leash so he can't jump up. So, and then I'll move the toy to the table. Now it's out of sight, no longer in my hands, rather than hold it way up in the air.
Yeah.
So I'm stepping on the leash. The puppy cannot jump up to reward. I have the toy in my hand. When the puppy offers the calm behavior, then I'll give them the toy.
Yeah.
If the puppy's very frantic, I'll hide the toy again. So it's up on the table. Oh, no, now you got to make your own choice again. So I'm not teasing the dog with the toy,
It
goes away. Yeah. And I'm going to step on the leash so the dog can't, my hands aren't controlling them. The dog is saying, hey, I'm leaping, but this isn't working. What's going to work? Oh, sitting or standing calmly works to bring the toy down.
Exactly. And that sometimes means we have to be super, super diligent to the point of it's borderline silly.
Right.
But only for a short period of time, mm-hmm. right? I just want to make sure my dog never gets rewarded for making this wrong choice and leaping on me to get the toy. So I'm going to take some time to set up the scenario. I'm going to take some time to make sure that I practice these rule out behaviors with him. And first off, I'm going to do it in a quiet environment. So there's not going to be a lot of other, a lot of other stimulus that's mm-hmm. going to want to take my dog's attention from me. I'm basically working with the puppy, and I like to take that rule out thing to the extreme step. So that first step I love with, putting it away, making sure that they don't have access mm-hmm. to that reward. Once they start getting that idea in their head, and it might be a couple of sessions. Some pups are really quick to pick up on things. Mm-hmm. It might only be one session that they start to show some impulse control, at which point you can start to push mm-hmm. a little bit more and ask them for more.
Right.
And that's the thing that...
Yeah, I was going to say too, I think that's one thing different that we have learned as dog trainers is to have patience and to wait things out and not to try to rush things to the end.
Yeah.
Whereas I find people who are first-time dog owners, they don't want to wait their dog out. They want to see the result right there.
Yeah.
They don't realize that we need to have patience and take our time and let the dog think through the process.
Yeah. And I think sometimes that's just because there's such a disconnect with what the dog's mind actually will be thinking about. Mm-hmm. And people have that expectation that your dog's going to be super cooperative with you just because dogs can be cooperative at times.
They've watched too many Walt Disney movies.
Exactly. Exactly. In reality, right? It's a little bit different. So the other thing, I love that, I love that you isolated that as what dog trainers do differently. I would say the other thing that we do differently is once we know that we're on the right track, we push the envelope. So yep. I'm going to push the envelope in training because I want it to be a piece of cake in real world scenario.
Right.
So now, after that first step, I'm going to have the toy in my hand and I'm going to insist that my dog make the choice with the toy in my hand. If he goes for the toy in my hand, my fail safe with that setup is, as you mentioned, stepping on the leash. So we do this tactically. So we do it where there's enough slack in the leash that the dog does not feel the leash. We don't want to advertise.
Yeah, we're not pinning them down. Yes.
Exactly. And we also don't want to advertise with tension on their collar, right? I have control, I have control. Because then when they don't feel that pressure on their collar, their cueing system is completely different from what this behavior is. And they're probably, innocently or not, going to say, aha, now is the opportunity. I can get that toy. So what we want to do is we want to have enough slack in the leash that when the dog goes to jump, it catches them. Right. So they get a good, quick little correction for making the wrong choice. And then as soon as they go, oh, that's not working. And I'm not letting my dog get up so much momentum that it's a huge correction.
Right.
It's probably like there's maybe 3 or 4 inches of slack in the leash. So as soon as they start to jump up, they get that little catch. Right. I want a quick timed correction. I don't want an overly harsh correction, but I want it to make the point that you're not going to be able to get up here to get the toy. And then when my dog goes, oh, okay, that wasn't working. How about this? And they stop trying to jump for it. You know, I mean, a sit or a down could be a great control measure in that case, but you don't even necessarily have to have that to have manners. Right. So they can just, you know, end up in a stand. And as long as they're not jumping for that toy right away, I'm going to say, yes, I'm going to make sure my foot's off that leash.
Right.
So that they don't get an ill-timed correction. And I'm going to say, get it. And I'm going to let them have a play with that toy. And then we're going to work our out. And I'm going to regain the control again at that point. And when that control is there again, as soon as I see my dog shift from that, ooh, party mode to, okay, emotional control for a second. Yes. Now you get the toy back.
Right.
So all these things, they really, they create such a wonderful impulse control in the dog, but they also create the opportunity for the dog to make those connections so that they can make those choices when out in the real world, right? If you want to know the equipment that our professional dog trainers choose and rely on for quality to help their dogs and their puppies learn exactly what is necessary, check out McCannDogs.store. So we talked a little bit about the mind of their own stuff, and I want to dive a little bit more into that because I really want people to appreciate the natural tendency of the dog. And that it is so much different than the natural tendency of the human.
Yes, yes.
So let's talk for a minute about the dog as an innate, like what are the innate rewards for a dog?
Food, finding food on their own, especially finding good smells, having a party, ripping stuff apart, you know, squirming into little holes and being all goofy and, you know, not letting us catch them. Like, those are things puppies love to do.
Chasing critters, squirrels, digging, barking. You know, and a lot of the times, these are not behaviors we love, right? If I'm going for a walk with my dog down the city street, the last thing I want is them for them to have their nose glued to the ground because our streets are littered, you know,
with grossness.
Yeah, yes. And the amount of dogs eating marijuana and cigarette butts are toxic and, you know, snow and salt and all the things. So if my dog's got their nose down the whole time, I'm going to have to mitigate them picking up things that would be bad for them. And I don't want to.
You know what was in the middle of my road the other day? I looked out my window and there was something red in the middle of my street.
Was it a yoga mat with a person in downward dog?
No. So I looked, I thought, I wonder what that is. And then later when I was crossing the street to go to my car, it was a bra, a red woman's bra.
My next guess was going to be Santa Claus.
No, just a red woman's bra randomly in the middle of the street.
Yeah, I was way off. I don't even think Santa wears a bra.
Who whipped off their bra in the middle of the street?
Oh, that's bizarre. Well,
I'm sure it fell out of someone's bag. Yeah, maybe someone going to a laundromat or something, but it was, you know, it was odd to see out there.
This underwear or this underwire, I'm done with it.
You know what? I have felt like that, actually. Yeah, maybe that's what it was. Yeah. Underwire, so pokey.
Done
off
with it.
Comes.
Done with it. I'm going free. Oh, my gosh. So, yeah, I mean, all of those things, I don't want to have to pay that much attention on my walks. I like to walk and I like to look around. Right. And I like to know that my dog is doing their job of walking nicely at my side. So,
And not to say that we don't let them sniff. Like, of course. You know, when I'm walking along, maybe I'll see a bush and it looks like it's in a good area
with no bras hanging right, off of it.
And I'll say, go sniff or go pee or whatever. And, I'll let Honda spend a little bit of time sniffing. But then when I say, okay, let's go, I expect now he leaves that. So I do let them sniff and sniff about, but I choose what they're going to sniff.
Absolutely. Yeah. And me too. Mm-hmm. Me too. Absolutely. On the city street, I don't let them sniff. I have boys. I've said this a million times on the podcast. I have boys. We would never get anywhere if I let them lift their legs on everything they wanted to lift their legs on. Mm-hmm. So that just is not going to happen. Right. But then our goal usually is to get somewhere where I can say, okay, time for you to have freedom now. I know this is a safe spot. And now you can go sniff around. You can do your business. You can pee on as many things as you want. And then I have my recall to say, okay, time's done.
Right.
Get in here and let's go home. Mm. And we switch back into more of a heel mode. They get the best of both worlds.
Right.
It's really, really nice. Mm. But they're not going to offer that without you making it worth their while to offer that. And without you conditioning that these are the expectations that I have. Which means doing some training. Mm-hmm. So, yes. I mean, it is definitely short-sighted to think that our dogs will naturally do what we want them to do when there's opportunities to sniff and pull and explore. I mean, dogs are scavengers by nature. So, yes, they are predatory creatures, but they're also scavengers. You know, it is innately rewarding for the dog to investigate. So whether that is the counter in your kitchen, whether that is the bush at the park, whether that is the grass at the park, the garbage can at the park, you know, all of those things are going to be innately valuable for the dog. And we need to override that in situations where we want the dog to focus on us instead of those things. So like we just talked about, there's definitely a time for exploration. Mm. I want my dogs to interact with the world. I want to make sure that they are fulfilled in terms of, you know, that scavenging nature. But it needs to be under control. Right. Because if they're scavenging in a place where there's, you know, potential marijuana, right. And I keep using this example, but it's because it comes up.
It comes up, yes. Or a broken bottle. Maybe you've let them go under a bush and you don't realize there's glass all under that bush. Bush.
Absolutely. My property right now is littered with stray cats. So there's a lot of cat poo on my property that is probably, you know, pretty contaminated with parasites. Mm-hmm. And, you know, those are things that I need to make sure that I can call Ned off of. I can stop him from investigating those things because they're tasty. Mm-hmm. And I don't want him coming up with parasites every couple of months. I don't want that wear and tear on his body for sure. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, there are times when it's appropriate to explore. And there are times when it's not appropriate to explore. But even when you're exploring, I still expect you to have your ears perked up, even though my dogs have flop ears.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. They still move about, though.
Yeah, they do. Yes. I still expect my dogs to listen when I call them. And here's the thing. If your dog is on a mission, whether it's to explore, whether it's to chase a critter, whatever the case may be, evolution has created the tunnel vision for them, right? So when they're really following a scent or when they are running after a squirrel, they shut their ears off.
They do.
You know, this is not something that we can accept in our human world because if that squirrel is heading towards the road and there's traffic coming, that's a danger.
Right.
So we need to teach them how to keep their ears open when they are in those modes. You know, whatever it is that you're doing, I need to do enough practice with my obedience that you can make the right choice.
Yes.
You know?
And a lot of that too is watching your dog closely. Yes. I think too many people are on their phones and they're not paying attention to their dog when they're out about in the world. Mm-hmm. When my dogs are loose, I am watching them and I'm watching the environment. Yeah. And as I see a situation start to unfold, that's your best time to get the dog back on you.
Absolutely.
People do a wait and see approach often.
Yeah.
And they let the dog get too far into what they're doing. Whereas if they, you know, nip that in the bud the moment it started, they would have had a much easier time getting the dog back to them.
Absolutely. And I think that ties in so beautifully with the choice idea because that's something that needs to be established for every single skill is when is it appropriate to allow the dog to make a choice and when is it not? So in allowing the dog to make a choice too early, where what you just said was brilliant, where people wait too long expecting that the dog is going to go, oh, yeah, no, I shouldn't be chasing this thing. I should come back to you. Or I shouldn't be sniffing this thing. I should be looking at you and engaging with you or responding to my name or whatever the case may be.
Right.
I think that that reward period, and when we talk about rewards, people often just go right to food in their head, right? They think, oh, reward the dog, that means I'm feeding the dog. So if I'm not giving my dog a cookie for that sniffing behavior, how is it rewarding? But they forget about the innate nature of the dog. So if I have a dog who is a scavenger, who follows their nose as their primary sense, then that dog loves and trusts their nose and following and scavenging. And that is rewarding for the dog. I don't need to add cookies. I don't need to add anything to that scenario to make it rewarding for the dog. It's already innately rewarding for the dog. What I need to do is I need to make myself at least as rewarding for the dog, not on an innate level, but on a taught level. And I also need to make sure that my dog has enough practice that he can function well enough to keep his ears open and hear what I have to say to him. Right. And that's repetition, right? If the repetition is him rehearsing, sniffing, and disengaging with me, that's going to be the rewarding behavior for him, right? If we go to the park and that's the first thing I let him do. Okay, let's talk about this for a second.
Okay.
When you drive to the park with your dog in the car, what do you do when you get there?
Well, the first thing I do is we park in the parking lot.
Yeah.
But when I get the dog, well, the first thing
in
I do
in the parking
is,
lot, no, yeah. in the middle of the baseball diamond. That's where Spuddy parks.
I ask the dog to wait before we get out of the car. So I gather up my leash and whatever I'm bringing with me into the park. And then I open up my tailgate. I open up the dog's crate and I say, wait. And my dog waits while I calmly hook the leash on. And then I give the dog permission to hop out of the car, or I lift the dog out of the car, depending on their size. And then when we get on the ground, the first thing I usually do is I do a few little warm-ups. Like, okay, sit. You know, okay, that's a good boy. Reward the sit. Okay, let's, do a little bit of walking. I might do a come, followed by a tune-up little pop right after. And I get the dog in listening mode.
Yeah, I love that.
And the dog says, oh, good things are happening. I don't want my dog to get to the park and go, oh my gosh, I just need to run to that tree and completely ignore Christine. Yeah. So going to the park is an interactive event.
Yeah. So the order of things matters, right? And especially when we're expecting our dogs to make good choices. And what you just said was so bang on that I really want to elaborate on this a little bit. If every time I get to the park, a lot of the times people think, oh, I just need to let him get this out of his system and then he'll focus on me more, right? So they get to the park, they let the dog sniff around a little bit.
Or, and yeah, then they open the door and the dog's gone like a shot out of their car.
Exactly.
And then they just lean against their car.
Yeah, well, and even in a situation, so let's say for a second, it's a person who does want the engagement, who's not just, okay, I'm going to let my dog out at the leash-free park and I'm going to stare at my phone or have a conversation and a coffee with this person while my dog does their thing. So if you're the person who really wants the dog to engage with you, you need to switch the order of these things, right?
Right.
When you get to the park, so my ritual when I get to the park, what my dogs are used to when I get to the park, it's messy in the beginning. Absolutely. But that's the sweat point, right? That's the point where I'm teaching.
Right. And that's the spot you often don't see. When you watch videos on YouTube about dog training, you don't see that messy in between. Yeah. That's what the dog trainers often cut out.
Yes.
And we shouldn't cut that out.
No, we should show it.
Like show us struggling. And because dog trainers, it's not all, I don't know what the word would be, peaches and cream. Like we struggle
sunshine
too.
Sunshine and roses.
But yeah, like there's some messy points where we're working with a young dog and.
Absolutely. Yeah,
like it doesn't go fluidly.
No, we don't get these magical creatures that just, automatically do. This is exactly what we're talking about today, right? Is putting the choice work in there in a way that works to your advantage. Right. So, I mean, that's brilliant.
Something just popped in my head and I have to say
head popping.
You know when people say, like, I was thinking about the man who just, or woman, who just opens the car door and lets the dog rush out and bomb around the park and stares at their phone. And they say, he's just being a dog. Let him be a dog. And then I think that's not being a dog. Dogs have been bred for purposes to work with man. Dogs aren't bred just to run willy-nilly and have fun.
Yeah.
Dogs have been bred to herd sheep. Dogs have been bred to pull wagons. Dogs have been bred to retrieve ducks. Dogs were never bred to ignore us and run willy-nilly.
No.
And being a dog is working with man.
Yeah.
That's how I feel.
Yeah, I love that. And I would say that's exactly why Tyler was the dog that he was, because he was bred to work and he wanted to work.
Like, to me, and that's a dog.
I was the outlet. Yeah. I mean, so I think that there is a lot to be said for letting the dog just enjoy their time and be a dog and right. sniff around and have their downtime, which I know that we all believe in very strongly, of course, because you want them to, right. to fulfill those innate desires
Yeah.
But I would not let that trump what I want
exactly,
from
the
dog.
Exactly, yes.
Right?
That's what people let it.
Exactly.
People use that as an excuse because they cannot control their dog.
Yeah, or it's easier if they let a little bit of the energy get drained out first and the novelty get drained out first, then it's easier to get their attention. And but you're teaching your dog.
Right, and I don't find that. I find that that initial energy is, is that's what I want to work with.
Yeah. Well, and I don't want to teach my dog to focus outwardly.
Right.
I want to teach my dog that when we get to some place and I let them out of the car, I'm the fun thing.
Yes.
So yeah, that's initially, that can be hard to convince them of. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to the park and hoping for the best and letting them out and like struggling through the first stages of training in that busy environment. I've already taught some skills in the white room, in the house. Mm-hmm. I've moved out to the front yard. I've moved out to the backyard. I've used the sidewalk in front of my house. I've already done some of this generalized training before I'm going to an exciting location like the park. Right. But when I get there in my car and I open the hatch, I do very similar things as you do. I've got them in the crate and they are not allowed to exit the crate until I say, okay. So I can even open the door, like after training, of course, I can even open the door of the crate and not say anything. And they're not coming out until I give them that nice clear release, right? Right. So that allows me to sort of make sure that everything is free and clear. If I need to clip on a leash, it allows me to clip on a leash before my dog hops out. It allows me to keep control in case there's traffic or other dogs or whatever the case may be. Mm-hmm. But then when I do say okay and let my dog out of the car, I immediately engage them at that point. Right. So it might just be sit. It might be sit while I finish putting the car back together and get whatever equipment I need for this training session or for this walk or whatever the case may be. I might say sit and then I might pull out a toy and do a little tug at the car. Mm. And then here's the thing. Because I'm practicing these scenarios, I might say, you're the best dog ever. Up you go and pop them back in the crate for a second and then repeat that whole thing.
Right.
So the dog gets to rehearse coming out of the crate and engaging with me, coming out of the crate and engaging with me. And I'm going to use a variety of things. Mm-hmm. I'm not just going to every time they come out of the crate, say sit and make it boring. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I'm going to release them from the crate, take off running so they get chase me and then have a playtime with them. Sometimes I'm going to right away move them into heel position and start moving off in this nice, fast, you know, energetic heel. Mm-hmm. And then they get rewards for that. Like there's all sorts of things that I would do to be worthy of their energy and their engagement. Mm-hmm. I'm not just going to go, okay, well, I hope you pay attention to me and I'm going to give you a dry piece of kibble after that. No, I'm going to be as engaging with my dog as I want them to be with me.
Right.
And that means play and interaction and engagement. Mm. It means some emotional control exercises at times as well. We always have to have a balance. But I think it's so important that we do that piece first. And then once I've had the engagement, once I'm like, okay, that was an awesome training session. Man, you're a great dog. Mm-hmm. All right, let's go wander around the park. And now you can sniff. You can do your business. And, you know, you can do all these things that you would do as a natural dog. Mm-hmm. But we've already fulfilled the engagement. I've already set the tone that you're in listening mode. Mm-hmm. And then I'm sure you're the same. Once my dog is on their own time and wandering around and doing the sniffing thing, that's an opportunity for lots of little quick response to name with quick little games. And then, okay, go sniff. I send them back again.
Right.
Sometimes I might let them sniff for 30 seconds. Sometimes it might be 2 seconds. Sometimes it might be 5 minutes. You know, I vary things so that they get used to just always having their ears on.
Yes.
So that now when it comes down to the choice between sniffing and listening, I have a much better chance of getting that right choice from my dog. And then that's going to continue to feed my training.
Yes. Another little game I'll play with dogs that love to sniff too. If I'm in the park and I know I have a dog that just adores sniffing, I can do it in a controlled manner. Mm-hmm. I can take one of my kibbles and I can tease the dog with it and wiggle it and hold them back. And then I toss the kibble out into the grass.
Yeah.
And the dog says, oh, I'm going to find it. And now he knows I threw that kibble, and now he's tracking it and finding it. And then he gets it. We have a little party, and then we do the whole thing again.
Yeah.
So he's getting good, productive sniffing, but I'm in control, and he's realizing that this fun sniffing is coming from Christine, yes, tossing that kibble.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a great way of channeling that drive as well and giving it more of a purpose. And this is especially important for those of you that have limited opportunity. You know, if you live in an apartment with your dog, for example, if you don't have a lot of green space of your own and you need to go out and find it, you need to make great use of those training situations as both training and as an opportunity to let your dog experience the world a little bit, get out some of those drives. Like if a dog is not allowed to explore those natural drives, a lot of the times that becomes a frustration point for them too, and that actually makes listening harder. So
right, yes,
we need to have a good balance, but we need to make sure that we're not putting all of those innate desires that the dog has as the most important things for them. We need to do the training first. You know, it's just like raising kids. Yeah, recess is great, but there's a reason that it's a short part of the day versus the longer learning period. There are reasons for that to be in place. They need a mental break, etc. But it's not in place of the structure and the teaching and the education, etc. And a lot of the times I think with people, we just, maybe we're so busy doing our own work and education and whatnot that we just want to live vicariously through our dogs and let them just be free.
Right.
But a dog that is just free to make their own choices at every point is going to make the wrong choice at some point, and that could be heartbreaking for everybody. So we want to keep them safe.
Right.
You know, that's the goal. We want them to live their best life, but that best life does not come by ignoring training.
Exactly, yes.
That best life comes with lots of training to build communication and build skills, be able to keep them safe, and also be able to do this engagement stuff with them. Because without the communication, you're not going to be valuable to them at all.
Right.
If all they see when they look at you is an alien speaking of a different language that they don't understand, you know, they'll take or leave you unless you have something that they really want. But if they can understand and communicate with you, that's brilliant.
Right, yes.
And it's such a relationship.
Just back to the fulfillment too. I'll look at my breed's heritage to help think of games that fulfill things that are from their heritage.
Oh, I love this.
So say a herding breed, for instance. So my Sheltie was, you know, I could tell that, you know, she wanted to chase things. She wanted to herd things. So I would kick a soccer ball around the yard, or we had a big, like, softer ball. And I would kick the ball and she would run out, and you could see her using her herding heritage to stop the ball and then to move it. And then we worked on having her return it to me. So I was playing a game with her that she found very satisfying because it used her herding heritage.
Yeah.
So think of what your dog was bred to do and then come up with games.
Yes.
That play upon that and help to fulfill some of those dogs' natural instincts.
Yeah, absolutely. And here's the thing with that too. I love to use those opportunities to also reinforce my obedience skills.
Yes.
So in that scenario, there would be times where I would say, sit. And, you know, something as simple as a sit doesn't seem like it would be that beneficial to training, but it is so beneficial in those scenarios because the dog is excited and they're stimulated and they want to chase this thing, and they know that chase is coming because you've got the ball and you're ready to kick it.
Right.
But you're asking them to do something that makes them use their ears and use their thought process before they get to do that thing. I do this a lot with Ned, actually, where we just hang out. My setup on my deck where we hang out quite a bit, he will frequently bring over his holy rollers for me to throw. And, you know, sometimes I'm not into it and I let him know that and we don't play. But other times I'm like, yeah, let's play, buddy. But I usually ask him to do things before I throw that holy roller.
Yes.
So it gets this practice in of him getting to practice these things.
Right.
And if I'm sitting and he brings me the holy roller and I go to throw it, he's excited, but he's not like out of his mind. So he has an easier time with the simple behaviors, even like the spins and the shake of paws and like all of the things that I might throw in just as behaviors that he knows that I'm going to test and make sure he can do before I throw the ball. But if I stand up and I'm in a position where I'm going to kick that holy roller, For some reason, that is 10 times more stimulating for him. Right. So he gets even more cloudy mm-hmm. in terms of his listening skills in that moment. So it's a great opportunity to practice it, mm-hmm. right? The things that don't get practiced don't get any better.
Right.
So sometimes he's so stimulated by this setup that just getting a sit is really hard. Mm. And you can see it. You can see the conflict in his brain, and he's trying to figure out how to get his butt to go down, but it's only like partway down uh-huh. because his mind is so distracted right. by the ball. It's a very innocent thing on mm-hmm. his part, but it's important for me to not go, oh, the poor thing, he's trying so hard, I'm going to throw his toy. No, I'm going to wait until that butt hits the yep. ground. And then sometimes if I think, you know what, buddy, you could do a lot better than that, I'm going to say, okay, and let him release from the right. set. And then I'm going to try it again
right.
because I yes. want better. If right. I'm going to reward him, I need to make sure that what he's right. done is worthy
exactly.
of that reward.
And I think a lot of people reward the dog no matter yeah. what the effort.
It's yeah. really hard not to, right. and I totally appreciate that.
It's like, imagine.
We love them. We want to give them right. those cookies, but it's so important for their clarity.
Right. Imagine if we came to work every day, Shannon, and just put our feet up on the desk and giggled all day.
That's what we do, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah. And they still paid us. That would be awesome.
Yeah.
But no, we
Marty,
know.
Marty, Deb. You paying attention?
Yeah, yeah, but we know that they'll come in and make us work, so.
yeah.
Yes.
Exactly.
But it would be great if we could get paid for doing nothing, and so many people do that with their dogs.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And unfortunately, it doesn't provide clarity for the dog, and it doesn't make the dog go, oh, I love you, because they kind of get it for anything and they don't necessarily connect it with any particular things. Mm-hmm. So then it's like, oh, I'll get it while the getting's good, but they don't necessarily make these right. great connections mm. as to why that food came. So truly, yes. you know, keep your expectations high, mm-hmm. be patient, and know that things are going to take some time to get there, but make sure that your criteria is high enough that it's worthy of getting that cookie or that reward or whatever the mm. case may be that you're going to throw to them. Right. But yeah, like sometimes their brains are just so preoccupied with the other distractions that it is hard for them yes. to turn on their ears. We need to practice that. And like those scenarios are so good for practicing it.
Yes. And dogs like to do little jobs. They like to feel useful. Like it's like us. Like, yeah. you know, imagine if we didn't do anything all day. Like after a bit, you just get, who cares?
Yeah.
But, you know, having little jobs and doing little things that bring satisfaction, you know, yeah. and our dogs like that too, you know, even if it's just something as simple as, you know, sitting before every door they go out.
Yes.
Or, you know, lying down before they get their dinner. Like a little job like that goes a yeah. long way into your relationship with your dog.
Absolutely. And people often confuse the relationship part and they think it's about, you know, the love and the snuggles and that's something that works well in a human world. And not to say that there's not dogs out there that enjoy snuggles. There's right. lots of dogs that enjoy being touched and cuddled and pet and things like that. But that's not how you build a great relationship by just snuggling with the dog. You build a great relationship by having the ability to communicate mm-hmm. and by fulfilling those needs for them in a way that is practical mm-hmm. and not going to work against our training efforts and not going to have, you know, 6 months down the road, you don't want me going, you know what? Oh my gosh, I'm so frustrated with this thing now because now my dog is 70 pounds instead of 20 mm-hmm. and they're dragging me down the street because they're pulling so hard right. because I wanted them to explore the world back then, but I didn't realize that in 6 months it was going to be so detrimental. So, right. I mean, it's so important. And you talk about this a lot, not letting the puppy do things that you wouldn't want the adult
exactly,
dog doing.
Exactly, yes.
That's a really important factor. Right.
And I find as well, too, even with little dogs, you know, these little balls of fluff, we tend to often put too many babying emotions into them.
Yeah.
But keep in mind, a little dog is a dog, and yes. its brain is a dog brain. It's not a human brain. It's not a baby brain. It's a dog brain.
Absolutely. And those dog brains are capable of remarkable things.
Yes.
So give them the opportunity to learn and to function well in our society. You know, it doesn't matter if it's a Chihuahua or a Great Dane. You can train those dogs.
Right. Yes.
You know, you should train those dogs. Mm-hmm. The little dogs tend to get away with a lot because they're little and cute and easy to just pick up.
I know. You pick them up and you put them in air jail.
Yeah.
Air jail. Gotcha. You're that. In air jail.
That's it. We're done.
Yep.
Yeah. So important. So important to work through things with those little dogs as right. well. We love yes. our little dogs.
Exactly.
So
but fun. Air jail is not the...
Air jail is no solution.
Is no solution.
No solution for you.
Nope. They should be able to be on their four little paws.
Oh my goodness.
Yes. They don't need air jail.
Oh, well, this has been a fun episode. So when you're out there with your little scavengers, when they're pulling and exploring the world and enjoying things, just remember, is that their choice innately? Is that the choice that you want them to make? Think through that and then flip the script on them a little bit so that they're giving you what you want first and then they have access mm-hmm. to those other wonderful right. ways of doing things.
Trained dog is going to lead a bigger life.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. My dogs come everywhere with me. Mm-hmm. You?
Yep. Definitely.
Do you
definitely.
Come everywhere with me?
I go everywhere with Shannon. She's got me well trained.
Well, on that note, I have more training to do with Swanee. I'm Instructor Shannon.
Instructor Swanee.
Happy training.
The McCann Dogs Podcast is brought to you by McCann Professional Dog Trainers. We help dog owners to have a well-behaved, four-legged family member. Please give us a call at 905-659-1888 or visit us at McCannDogs.com. Happy training!